Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover luxurious duvet sets today. Visit harrycurry.com for stylish comfort this spring.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Well, the event we're told is going to happen in the Rose Garden, inappropriately enough. Tomorrow at the White House, tomorrow afternoon, US time. And I suppose the situation is best summed up by one factory owner in China saying, "We are absolutely helpless. We don't know what's going to happen, and nobody does at this stage, except we know it will not be, according to most economists, it will not be good for the world economy." Michael Cullerton is on WhatsApp. Michael, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good. You're just back from Las Vegas, the National Hardware Show.
Yeah, it was actually quite interesting what was going on over there with the mention of the tariffs happening around the world, especially obviously from the American side of things.
And what are they thinking, saying, or worrying about?
Well, basically, most of these stands that were over there, the booths, were actually putting on percentages and then giving a discount to the customers, so to help with the tariffs. So at the end of the day, it's still going to go on to the customer. You know, the consumer is still going to end up paying for it at the end of the day. Everything we ship over, we manufacture in Ireland, we manufacture in the US, and we manufacture in China. But everything we ship over is just going to have a tax that comes in, and it's just going to go on to the consumer. And we're not talking about 25%, because 25% on the import duty becomes nearly four times that. You know, so if you've got a product for €10, it's going to be €12.50 now.
Yeah.
Or it could even be more. We don't know yet.
Yeah, exactly.
That €2.50 becomes €10. So your 40 product becomes €50. So it's not just 25%. It works out a lot more at the end.
I don't fully follow that now. I know 40 obviously goes to 50, but how does...
Everything works in fives, okay? When you're manufacturing a product, it goes into fives. Okay. So you have to do a distributor, there's middle guys, there's wholesalers, there's retailers, and then there's the consumer. Okay. So everyone has to make a bit of profit out of it. So it all just ends up being added on, unfortunately.
And when you say at the hardware show they were saying 25% discount on tariffs, what are they saying? We'll take the hit, or do they want you to take it? Do they want you to reduce your prices?
Yeah, but what everyone is doing is they open the pricing. Especially the new products, they're upping the price. And say if they were charging €10, they're now charging €12.50, but they're giving the 25% discount to the wholesaler. So they're saying that we're giving back the tariff, you know, so you don't have to pay the tariff if the tariff comes on. So that's basically what's happening.
And who pays the tariff?
Eventually, the import, the customer that's buying off me in the US will pay the tariff. And then he will then put it on to the consumer.
Mm-hmm.
So it just comes on to the consumer all the time.
And how will it affect your business, though?
Insofar as
you can predict. Okay.
It's already affected very much so. In October, we were told that we were going to hold off on orders until we find out what the election is about.
Okay.
And then when the election went through, then we were saying we're going to hold off on orders until... we find out what the tariffs are going to be.
Okay.
And even down to yesterday, I got an email from one of our large customers over in the US, and he basically said that we're going to wait until the 11th because we don't know what the European are going to come back. We don't know what's going to happen. So it's even gone even further. So even though he's coming in with the tariffs tomorrow, we're not going to really know what's going to happen until the 11th or 12th of April.
And
so it's very tough.
What is your product, Michael, and how do you think it will be affected?
Well, We're Stayhold. Stayhold is obviously an automotive part. We're also Superhooks, which is the same company. So Stayhold was a removable wall for the trunk of your car, basically. Okay. So the boot of your car. So it stops things from moving around. And we have the utility patent on this since 2013. Developed it again in 2015. I mean, it's the OEM then in the US. So we manufacture in the US. We also have tariffs in we're in like the stores over in America. We're in Lowe's, Home Depot, we've been in Walmart, Meijer, all the big companies. It's just you know, and they've all just stopped ordering. You know, they just like stopped waiting to see what happens. It's going to be a product that it's kind of our product would be a necessity in some cases, but it wouldn't be it would be a kind of a luxury product. So we're going to find the luxury products are going to go out the window. They're not going to buy them. They're going to take in the products that are needed and maybe not the luxury products. So you'll find it, I think it'll go worldwide, because when the tariffs go back and forward, we're going to have trouble. Yeah. So,
and have you already had orders postponed?
Yes. Yes, we've had three orders postponed already. Yeah. Yeah. And quite large orders, you know. So now we know they will come, but, you know, and they will come when everything is like settled and all that. It's just, you know, we went through COVID already. We were doing very, very well before COVID. Okay. Then COVID hit us, you know, and then we were coming out of COVID. We had a fantastic year last year. And then all of a sudden this hit us then in October. So it's like, you know, you never know what's going to happen anymore. it's quite scary.
What President Trump thinks will happen is, somebody will start manufacturing what you manufacture, Stayhold, or a replica of it or something similar. An American company, it'll never come back to you, because his idea is an American company will start manufacturing it.
Well, we have a utility patent on it, so we're patented, okay. So they can't actually copy it. But what they can do is they can make us manufacture in the US. Yeah. What happens there is, which we already are manufacturing in the US, it's three times the price to manufacture.
Wow.
So even the customers are saying, okay, even if it's 25% or 40% or whatever, it's still going to be cheaper than manufacturing in the USA. And especially if these tariffs come in, the consumer's going to go up, the economy's going to go up, not going to be able to afford the wages to manufacture. The price of manufacturing will go up in America. It's a kind of a domino effect.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not going to stop until someone has some sense and turns around and says, okay, this is what we can do, this is what we'll do. But, I mean, it's going to just keep on tariff against tariff. We all know that China's they'll just put on tariffs as well. Mm-hmm. You know, the Europe are going to put on tariffs, maybe. Canada, tariffs, everyone's going to just put on tariffs and everyone's just going to be paying more. It's the consumer. It's nobody else but the consumer is going to be paying more. And then the economy goes up. And all of a sudden, we've got, you'd be going with a wheelbarrow for a bottle of milk in the US soon, you know, with a full of cash.
And the wheelbarrow, as happened in the Weimar Republic, is probably worth more than the cash that's in it. As you can see, Keir Starmer is playing a very smart game. Apparently, he talks to President Trump twice a week. He was talking to him on Sunday night there, UK time. If they get under the fence, could you move to Newry?
Yeah. See, we went through Brexit as well. That hurt us too. Would I move to New York? Look, we're an Irish company. We're Irish based. All the Irish founders. We've very big investors. One of the biggest companies actually in America has invested in us. The Irish Enterprise Ireland and Leo helped us out big time at the start. Okay. And they still do today. You know, we've got some local investors, and we've got some, people that are really interested in this company. And it's like, why would, you know, I don't want any move to Newry. I wouldn't move the company anywhere. I'd just rather, we're an Irish company and, for years and years, Joe, Ireland was, you know, obviously you see it, we're all the pharmaceutical companies, all the manufacturing companies. Mm-hmm. It's a good place to have a company. No, it is really good, because you've got the intelligence, you've got the people, the staff, the schooling's very good over here. You've got a really, really good country here. And it's just scary, you know, when things like, you know, when it's out of your control, you don't know what's going to happen. It's all about tomorrow, basically. You know, it's all about tomorrow, the next day, next week, next year.
You know, and he loves theatre, he loves drama. The phrase shock and awe has been used about tomorrow, which is bizarre. Take us to Las Vegas, if only. Take us to Las Vegas, Michael. Did you meet many people at the trade fair, so to speak?
Yeah, we met a lot.
But did any of them support the tariff?
No, they basically, no. They were all saying this is going to go on to the consumer. Every single customer we made, we said, this is just crazy. When Biden went in, we thought these tariffs would go. Now that he kept them on, and now we've got more tariffs coming in. It's just getting harder and harder to take in new products and different ideas. So they're hanging on to, you know, what's bread and butter and what will sell. So, you know, and that's it. They won't take any more chances, put it that way. So it's going to be very hard for new companies to start up and things like that. But again, as I said to you, the EI and all them will support. They did. They helped me big time.
Enterprise Ireland, yeah.
It's
a great product. I've seen it here. I've seen it in the back of tradesmen and tradeswomen's for transit.
We're in 42 countries, 32 at the moment. We were in 42. We're in 32 countries. And even the super hubs now has gone very, very large. That's like in Home Depot and Lowe's in America. And like it's a cost-effective product. I mean, it's only $5 over in America. But that's going to go to $7 now. See, that's the difference. It's going to go from $5 to $7. So it's the consumer paying for it.
What percentage of your business is in the States, Michael?
Oh, it'd be 70%.
Would it?
You know, we are in Australia. It's the biggest market in the world. You can't get one store anywhere in Europe, really, except for Carrefour. But you look, we're in Home Depot, it's 2,500 stores. Lowe's is like 1,750 stores. You know, we've got Ace Hardware, which is going to be 5,000 stores. You know, it's just one customer can make it for you in the US.
Yeah.
You know, but it's very hard to get the same amount of customers. It's a lot of work to get the same amount of customers in Europe. You're talking maybe 30 or 40 different customers to get one, the same as one customer. It is the biggest market in the world. It is. Like it is. For the retail, anyway.
Well, even for your product, given that the most popular vehicle in the States is the pickup truck, isn't it?
With the, it's the pickup truck. It works on all surfaces now. We've developed it into a new product. You know, but it does work on the carpet. It works on rubber. It works on everything. So it is, America is a massive market for us. Huge. Massive. You know, Walmart was selling an amazing amount of products, you know, for us. And then COVID hit and they just stopped. So then COVID hit. And it takes ages to get into these guys. It takes months, years. I mean, we'll do an order now. It'll take 6 months before it's on the shelf, you know. And then it could have taken 6 to 1 year to get it out, to even get the order, you know. So it's not easy, put it that way. And then this happens again. So it's like, ugh. You know, when people second think, it slows them down on the manufacturing, slows them down on buying, and it just doesn't help. You know,
If you're still, I know we're radio. If you still can't fully understand the product, it's called Stay Hold. Look on their website there.
It's a removable wall for the trunk of your car, so it stops things from moving around. It's like a divider that sticks to the carpet and stops things from moving around. So anything like that will not move anywhere. It'll just stay still.
And they look like bookends at times, don't they?
That's exactly what it is. Yeah, okay. It's basically a bookend that sticks to the carpet or sticks to the rubber or sticks to things. So it's just a divider. So if you like, you know, and you can move it out of your way so your trunk is still there, you know, if you're playing golf or whatever, so your trunk is still full. So it's not like a box. It's basically, you can make kind of a box out of it. It's actually, we sell an awful lot of them and people love it and our reviews online.
And who invented it, Michael?
I did. Oh, I came up with it many years ago when I was a sales rep and I was going around Christmas and I had hampers and wine and beer in the booth, obviously delivering to the customers.
Okay.
And I went around the corner and it slipped and the bottle of wine smashed into a tray of beer and I went everywhere, all over the diaries, all over things. I had to go back and I was just like, why isn't there a removable wall out there? So we just put them, you know, jam it in there and make sure nothing moves around. So then I came up with it. And my wife has a curtain shop and we basically got some Velcro offer and hook tape. And I started using it and I was stuck to the carpet. It worked brilliantly. And then we came up with the rubber for the, you know, for rubber mats. And we came up with TPU. We came up with different items. Oh, no, we've 32 products now. You know, so it's not.
Incredible.
Yeah. So, and even the super hooks now, like we developed super hooks and they're gone worldwide too. You know, they're all over the place. And that just holds actually everything. In your shed, your tools, your from your shovel to your, you know, your sunglasses to everything. Check it out, superhooks.co.
Well done. Stay there, Michael. Paul O'Sullivan is MD of Ireland's Eye Knitwear. And I'm especially thinking of I'm thinking of your company, obviously, Paul, but the companies on the Aran Islands who almost exclusively sell high end to the USA. And a tariff on them would make their product even more expensive. Paul, what's your situation?
Good afternoon, Joe. Thanks for having us on. So, we're here manufacturing knitwear in Balgoyle. We've got 65, 70 people employed.
Brilliant.
And about 10% of our sales go to the United States. So it's a very important 10%. But listening to the chatter over the last week or so, and really thinking what's going to happen tomorrow, and in a sense, it's outside of our control. Yeah. So I've tried not to worry about it over the last few weeks, and managed pretty much not to. And then we'll see what happens tomorrow, and we'll deal with it then. But I say we're in the fortunate position that just 10% of our business is in the States, whereas Michael, your previous caller, he's got maybe, I think he's 70% of his business. Yeah. So he's in a different situation.
But now the word that's been used is people feel helpless. They've no idea what's going to happen. They've no idea how long it will last. They know no idea if it'll go up, down, sideways or whatever, depending on reaction. We've no idea what the EU reaction is going to be. Is that going to be different than the UK reaction? And are they going to try and get under the fence?
We just have to wait and see tomorrow, you know, and deal with it. Whatever way the cards fall, we'll deal with it.
Was the USA, or is the USA a growing market for you?
It would be, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you do sort of Irish knitwear and you make it here, you know, it's kind of unique to Ireland. We'll deal with it. Not to minimise Michael's situation, but the sky isn't going to fall in.
Okay.
You know, it's kind of one way we sort of look at it. We will deal with it and we'll get through it. And, you know, we've had tough times before. We've had COVID and we had the great financial crash in 2007, 2008. And you manage your way through it. You get through it and you deal with it. It doesn't mean to say it's easy. But on the other hand, I suppose you think, you know, if you were living in Gaza or if you were living in Ukraine, you probably wouldn't be too worried about tariffs tomorrow, would you?
And what I said, I was reading out a headline from the New York Times this morning with the word, we feel helpless. These are manufacturers, I said, but you're not hopeless.
You're not hopeless, that's it. And you can never lose hope, you have to keep going. And we don't know what we're facing till tomorrow. So let's try and look at it tomorrow and see what we're dealing with and figure our way through it then. Maybe I'm whistling past the graveyard, but I started to think, look, the sky isn't going to fall in. We'll get through it and we'll figure our way through it. Everything isn't going to just stop, you know.
And if the USA is 10% at the moment, but you did say it was expanding, and we'll wait and see. Where is the major part of your market?
So we'd be stronger in Europe. So we export just over 50% of what we manufacture here, and most of it goes to Europe. So markets like Germany, France, Netherlands, Italy, Belgium. And we'd be stronger in those markets than we would be in the United States. And thankfully, they're all in the EU, so we don't have to worry about tariffs there.
I know it only was a passing moment, as the fellow said. Were we a bit naive thinking that Trump might treat us a little bit better than other countries, given that, as he said himself, he loves the country and he's a New Yorker and he's grew up with the Irish and he knows them inside out? It makes no difference. Sure it doesn't.
I don't think it does. The impression, you know, one has from sort of this distance is Trump was really only interested in Trump and his agenda.
Mm.
Although maybe he has to listen to the, you know, the Irish vote. Maybe he has to. I'm sure he has to have some regard for the Irish vote in the United States. But everything seems to be very, I suppose, transactional.
Yeah, but he ignored the auto industry in the States. They weren't in favor of tariffs, but he went ahead, which is a massive constituency he was playing to during the election. Michael, it's not fair to say you're helpless at the minute, but not hopeless.
Oh, definitely not hopeless. Yeah. I mean, we still sell the product into America, like it does sell.
Okay.
So it's going to get a little bit more difficult and maybe not as much, but never helpless. Mm-hmm. To get through COVID, as people
said,
all of that, you know, that was like, he came up with a very good point with, you know, what's happening around the world and the wars and Gaza and all that and, you know, the Ukraine. We are very lucky in this country, you know, and we get our kids through, you know, education and all that. And, we always find a way. We always do, you know, and we have been through the mill, not only this century, but last century as well. So, you know, it's just, it's about, mm-hmm. it's about what we can actually fix. So he's right. Tomorrow, we'll find out a bit more. But it's not only tomorrow, it's going to take a few weeks to find reaction from different governments, different countries within Europe and around the world. And see what happens there.
Okay.
But no, I'd like to see what happens tomorrow. I'm still very confident about our product. So I'm still very confident about what we're doing. I'm still confident about the potential for the product in different automobiles as well, because we're actually in some cars now. We come with the car.
But how did you get through? How did you get through Brexit?
Brexit was tough because basically Brexit is still a bit of a hassle. Shipping from here to the UK is difficult. And then so I've also got a warehouse in Germany because obviously it's situated in Germany, so I can ship, and Holland, so I can ship around Europe without having to go through the UK, mm-hmm. because we obviously have to go through the UK all the time, unless you're doing container or whatever. But it still goes through the UK. So even T1s and that was going through. But it's fine. Like, you know, it was a challenge at the start. And again, you look at Brexit, you look at the pricing in the UK, that's gone way up, you know, and that's all because of Brexit. You know, so, but we managed through that and we're selling into the UK very strongly, you know.
Well, people even know, if you want to send an envelope to the UK that's bigger than your normal classic envelope that has a book or a newspaper in it, you have to fill out paperwork at this stage.
I feel sorry for the people in the people in the post office. They have to type out about 30 different things.
I know.
You know, from one little package. You know,
Paul, were you affected? I'll come back to you in a second, Mike. Paul, were you affected by Brexit?
Yeah, a little bit initially,
okay.
Joe. Teething problems with import export, but after a while, it seems to have settled down.
Okay.
And things are running fairly smoothly at this stage.
Okay, before I let the two of you go, Michael, people are asking, where can I buy your product in Ireland? Stay hold.
Woody's have it. You can also get us online with stayhold.com. Actually, I think we're out of stock at the moment for like a few items, but we do have it on Amazon. We have it on our EU sites and things like that. We're also in a few other stores around the country. I can't think of them, but there's quite a few. So
okay, it's called Stayhold. And Paul, where can people buy your knitwear?
Well, the first place to look, I suppose, is on our website, IrelandEyeKnitwear.com.
Ireland's Eye, okay.
That's the first plan. Some of the good retailers around Ireland.
Well, I'm thinking, when you mention, say shops and retailers have Ireland's Eye product, but when you mention Ireland's Eye, I'm thinking of the other island off the coast of Dublin there, Lambay, and they're producing their own whiskey, and sounded fantastic and never tasted it, but their whole marketing drive was about the American market. They're going to be decimated. Well, hopefully not.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant product. But anyway, worrying times. But as you say, not hopeless, not hopeless. So it's brilliant to hear the two of you put that frame on it. Thanks indeed, Michael Cullerton. Have you invented anything else, Michael?
It's nearly
15 years since you invented anything. Come on.
No. We've done super hooks, and I came up with a golf rake during COVID. A golf rake. Pocket golf rake. It goes on the end of your club. So, because the rakes were taken out of the bunkers. We never stop. And I've actually, we have a new product coming out now in the next, we'll see how things go, but hopefully in the next 6 to 8 months, we'll have our new products out as well. And we've got some more products to come onto the range as well.
Have you got them patented already? I hope you have.
Everything's patented. We work around patents for everything.
Oh, and as a child, were you brilliant with Meccano or Lego? Or
I was a devil. I was just, Lego. Obviously, everyone loves Lego. My son loves Lego as well, but he's got quite a good collection. But, I was always, wheeling dealing type of thing, you know, always coming up with fixing things for everybody, trying to, you know, make it better, you know,
And Paul, also best of luck to the two of you, and thank you for that contribution. As you say, and as listeners are saying, people are very confused. They seem, manufacturers especially, seem very helpless. But the message there from Paul and Michael is that it is not hopeless. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Well, another major event in Dublin to remember. Liam Whelan, I know it's a long time ago now, the 1958 Munich air disaster. Liam was only 22, playing for Man United, a superstar in Ireland back in the 50s. And there's been a ceremony at the Liam Whelan Bridge there just on the edge of Cabra, and John Whelan is at the commemoration because he's the brother of Liam. Liam, good afternoon, John. Liam,
yeah, hello, Joe.
Liam would have been what age today?
Liam would be 90 today.
Wow.
First of April, 90 today. Yes.
And tell us about the event at the bridge there at 1 o'clock.
Yeah, well, there was the supporters club. There's two or three different supporters club here at the moment on the bridge, and they do it every year, and as my sister Rita and myself now, we say this could be the last year, but every year they never forget them.
Yeah.
They've turned up in the numbers again today now, and with the flags and the buntings and everything. So we've made a way, actually, Joe, now. We're actually up at the graveyard now at the moment.
Oh, in Glasnevin, yeah.
Are now at the moment. And they've had to put the flowers on the grave at the moment.
On the grave, I see it often. It's on the, as you're coming up the glass, it's over in the left-hand side
St. Paul's.
And it's Paul's always side, the grave yeah. is the grave is always oh, very well oh, tended, very well right. tended. And John, do you remember your brother?
Oh, I do.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I was 16 at the time of the crash, yeah. And my father actually died before I was two.
Okay.
And so Liam and Christy, my older brother, Christy was the older one of the two. Christy, they looked after me. They brought me everywhere. And when Liam came home, when he came home from Manchester, he'd bring me, if he was training, if he was going to matches or going anywhere, he'd normally bring me with him. And so when the accident happened then, it was a void. Now, as I said, my poor old mother, as I said, after raising seven of us, and then Liam, I think that it was harder for because Liam wasn't at home, the idea of the crash, really.
And how did, it's a different time, obviously, 1958, but how did the news get to your mother?
What happened? I actually, Joe, was doing playing football. I came home. It was actually a couple of young lads when I was playing football. One of them got the news. I don't know how he got it.
Yeah.
But there was a friend of ours, a man called Charlie Jackson. He was Liam's manager in Hull Farm, and he became sort of friend of the family. And he called up to the house. Now, Joe, the accident actually happened at 3:04, and I'm not sure exactly what time Charlie called up at. It must have been 3:30, 4:00.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very unusual time for the call. And when he called from there, he came in, and immediately my mother looked at the clock.
Mm-hmm.
And she looked at him. She said, "Charlie, they're home." And he said, "No, they're not." He said, "They're not." And immediately the radio, I know we had no television at that time, immediately the radio was turned on. And it would have been an English station. Gradually the house, different people came to the house.
Yeah, but at that stage, would it have been known, it's very windy there, at that stage, would it have been known, John, who had survived?
No. It went on for the whole night, right into the night time. Gradually, we listened to the radio, and different people were mentioned as having been killed.
Yeah.
And eventually, we got a call. It was a Father Mulholland. He was a great friend of Liam's in Manchester.
Okay.
He had made his way down to Old Trafford.
Yeah.
He rang. We had no phone. It was a taxi driver. Farrell was the name. Lived two doors up. And he rang there, and it was Christy went in. My older brother Christy went in and got the message. And it was very hard on my mother, Joe, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
At this time, as I said, the house was fairly packed, but gradually the people who heard it had left and left us on our own. It's just his family.
And were you aware? Were you aware how big a superstar, John? Liam was.
Well, you see, this is the thing about it. At the time, at the time, it wasn't, we didn't have television. We didn't have papers,
yeah.
The weather papers. Yeah. But we knew that he was playing in what they call the first division. There was a, before the Premier Division, mm-hmm. the first division was, and he was one of the top goal scorers. And in the 1956-57 season, he finished third top goal scorer in the league.
Wow.
So, yeah. And like in its time, Liam scored 52 goals in 96 matches for United. And,
incredible.
We knew obviously that how good he was, and how good he would have been as well, Joe. You know.
And it's the Munich air disaster. It's there was recent book published about it. Like another book, many books about
that's,
it.
I see that. Yes,
yeah,
that's right.
Very powerful book. And there's been a number of brilliant radio documentaries in here made by one, Des Cahill, and two, the late, great Colm Keane. They made two fantastic documentaries. Let me stay there, John, if you can. Martin Matches. Martin, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. Lovely to hear the programme about Liam Whelan and United.
And explain. Well, I think a lot of people know, but explain why Liam Whelan, who died at the young age of 22, he died in 1958. He was killed in that awful plane crash as they came back from, tried to take off from in Munich from a match in Germany. Why is Liam Whelan still such a part of our culture, Martin, and our memory, our collective memory?
I think because of the natural talent that he displayed on the field, and the fact that he was just an ordinary 3-8 Dubliner. I think he was an outstanding player and an outstanding gentleman in life. And really, he set the seeds for the likes of George Best and what came for Manchester United. United had a great relationship and still has with Ireland. And Matt Busby was absolutely brilliant at that, forming that relationship between the two countries.
And I heard a story yesterday of Matt Busby. Obviously he had scouts here, but it wouldn't be unusual for Matt Busby to come to Dublin twice a week to look at a ball player, a young player.
Not at all. And he instantly knew what the talent was on the field. There wasn't much talk from Matt Busby, but he knew straight away what a good player was. And Home Farm were absolutely marvellous at the time
and the years
to follow. For blood and young players that went on to be very great players in the English league.
And so Home Farm were just so big, weren't they? Again, in the
they were huge at that time. for providing young players and outstanding players in England. Yeah.
I'll go back to John for a sec. Stay there, Martin, if you can, please. John, it's
can I just say that
yes, please do.
There was a man called Billy Bean. Was actually the man who actually noticed Liam first.
The scout, okay.
Billy Bean. Billy Bean actually sent away John Giles, Tony Don.
Yeah.
A lot of very good players Billy Bean sent away. And he was the one. He was the one that noticed Liam. And they came looking then at United to sign him. And it was Christy, my older brother. Christy was, saying to you, my father was dead at the time. So Christy was the one doing the talking. And he didn't want any trials. He said, straight away, I want them signed. So they signed Liam straight away. And he would have been 18 years of age at the time, Liam, when he went over.
Yeah. I wonder, Martin, was there a battle to get Liam? Were a few clubs looking for him, I wonder?
There probably was, but Busby had an outstanding approach about him and everything. And, like, in comparison to today's managers, there was none of that furore, like what goes on. He just said, like, go out and enjoy yourself and play. And that's what the players felt fully at freedom to go out and do that. And Liam Whelan totally expressed himself on the field.
That's correct. Now, that is correct what he's saying there. Yeah, yes, yeah, yeah, that is correct. And of course, Liam actually, I was always considered Liam to be a ball player, what they call a ball player. A ball player. Even though he scored all the goals he did get. But it's sad occasion, Joe.
And And John, I'm thinking, well, thankfully John Giles is still with us, but I'm thinking there was a time in Dublin especially, and working class Dublin, where the player going to the UK, like Johnny Giles, who was born and lived near my father down there in Emerald Square, like Liam Whelan. Now, they're slightly different in years there now, I do accept that. The great Liam Brady, another working class boy from North Dublin.
Eamon
Dunphy came through Home Farm as well. There was a great connection with the English game.
The thing about it, actually, we're only just talking up here now with the supporters club and how many Irish were actually in Manchester at that particular time.
Yeah.
And we between us, I think we mentioned something like 9 or 10 Irish players over there at the time, between the Northern Ireland and Southern Ireland. There's about 10 Irish players over there at the time.
And they were all living in digs, weren't they, John?
Yeah. Liam actually lived with Bobby Charlton.
Ah.
Liam was in digs with him one time. That's what I was just telling the lads a story there this morning about it, that Bobby and I went over to stay with them. I was staying with him and Bobby.
Yeah, and then Bobby Charlton. And Bobby was there when the Liam Whelan Bridge was formally inaugurated,
wasn't he?
Yeah, I remember
that day. Yeah.
It was a great day.
Yeah.
Another great day for a great person. John, when you said you're continually surprised, in a nice way, that the events keep going.
Honestly, Joe, really and truly, to support us, Rob, there's so many lovely people involved with it. And every year, as I'm saying to you, they go out of their way to do something different, and whether it be invite us to their dinner dance, invite us to do the AGM, but they always go out of their way to include myself and my sister Rita.
Yeah.
They do that, and it has it. They're hearing the numbers this morning. They are now, and well, it's the afternoon, I suppose. But they're hearing numbers. They are different parts of Ireland. Yeah. There's two or three from. From the Northern Ireland, that are coming down. I don't know, Joe. It's amazing, isn't it, that after all these years, that they still
Johnny or Joe.
Martin, yeah.
Yeah, Joe. I'd just like to say that maybe the people there were at the scene, but of all the matches that I was at in my time over the years, I still put out as one of the best times ever in Old Trafford. Was Matt Busby's testimonial, and that was against Jack Charlton's Ireland.
Okay.
And it was magnificent.
Yeah.
It was magnificent, like, to be Irish in Manchester that weekend. It was brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, the reason I hear Liam, as you probably know, John, I hear Liam's name mentioned probably twice a week because my brother-in-law, Pat is the.
He's here with me.
Of course he is.
He's at the ticket. He has his usual few words there.
He's great. When I sent him the book.
He's an excited tractor road man himself.
That's right, yeah. And then his father, Paddy Meehan, was legendary as well. And I sent Paddy the new book about Munich by David Peace a few weeks ago. And you swear. His reaction, all his Christmases have come together. He eats, breathes, and Man United and about. John, do you still follow Man United?
I'm about to be crying on the shoulders. They were all crying on each other's shoulders there now. And as I say, the man at the moment that's manager, he seems to be a very nice man, but I don't know. We'll see, Joe. They've gone through it since the crash. There's been ups and downs with Manchester United, and we've gone through it with them. The time that Matt retired, and then Wilf took over, and then Frank O'Farrell, and then Tommy Doherty, and then went on, then Ron Atkinson, and finally, eventually, in the 80s, Alex took over.
Yeah, Alex Ferguson.
He was great.
Yeah.
He was great. Now. And it's very hard to replace him.
Eamon, stay with us, John. Eamon Mahan is—I don't know where you are now, but you were in a pram in Manchester.
That's correct, Joe. Yeah. Eamon Mahan here, chairman of Home Farm Club.
And Home Farm, as you say, such a legendary club, especially in those days, its connection with the UK. Obviously, your family would have known Liam through the club. But you were living in Manchester.
Well, I was. My mother and father had emigrated to Manchester, I think, in 56.
Okay.
And my mother, who's still alive, by the way, she's brilliant. Over 100.
Brilliant.
And she remembers that day very well when Manchester was silenced, when the wow. announcement arrived that morning. And she happened to be walking me in a pram. I think I was 2.5 years of age.
Yeah.
By Old Trafford Cricket Club. Of all places,
yeah.
And, it wouldn't be very far from Old Trafford football ground. The cricket ground's not very far from it. No.
And so that's always her abiding memory. She remembers it as well as anything. That's just Manchester went into silence.
Oh, yeah.
And my uncle who lived in Manchester, he lived out in Bury. He was married to my auntie Nuala. He was a lifelong Manchester United, and every time I met him, he died a few years ago. He always talks about Liam Whelan, or Bill Whelan, as he calls him, playing for Manchester United.
And wasn't Jackie Carey, that was another name I grew up with, Jackie Carey.
Obviously was born, he captained Man United, I think, in 47 to win the FA Cup. Then captained the World 11, who played England, which was
it was.
He's maybe one of the people who's...
Jackie Carey, when Liam went over first and Jackie Carey heard his name, he said, try and hold on to your name, Liam. As a gentleman was saying, they called him Billy Whelan, that's what they called him. But, of course, the Irish all called him Liam.
And then we have Liam, and the name keeps going in that part of the world.
Keeps going.
Okay, Joe at RT.ie, 51551 is the text number. By the way, Johnny Giles, the great Johnny Giles, I haven't heard him recently now. He's a great pundit, as we know, here in this parish and then latterly on News Talk. And even if he had no interest or no ability, which is me, in soccer, to listen to Johnny Giles as a pundit, I never saw him play, though my father idolised him. He played with Stella Maris. Can I mention that, Eamon?
That's correct.
and by the way, Eamon, before the break, your mother is she from Ireland originally?
Oh no, she's from Ireland. She's from Fairview.
Okay,
Dublin, and she's 3, and she's still alive. She's heading for her 104th birthday now.
Wow!
Oh,
in
a few
my
weeks, and she's still cooking dinners at home, and still, giving out the orders, and well up in politics and sport.
Isn't that brilliant?
Amazing.
And what's her name and her maiden name?
Her name is Maura Mahon, but she's Maura Heron.
Heron, okay.
H-E-R-O-N.
Just people will remember. Well, send her a kind regard. That's an incredible woman. Incredible woman. And to be able to share that memory with you, you're in the pram, the word is coming through to Manchester that their culture, the heart, the football heart of their city, with respect to Man City fans, had been nearly half the crew, half the passengers had been killed in that horrific, horrific crash. And for your mother describing that silence that befell that city. And I suspect as well, John Whelan, a silence befell Cabra as well when they realised their favourite son had been taken so young. Terrible tragedy.
Stay with us, Joe.
Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
I should mention again, John was remembering, so many people remembering Liam Whelan from Cabra, who was killed at a young age. And there's a play opening, musical actually, opening in Dublin tomorrow night, and the Ambassador at the top of O'Connell Street, and it's called Dockers, but it's based on the story of Gary Brown's father, again from Cabra, well-known family in Cabra, and he was killed in his workplace as well, but he was killed down the Dublin docks, and the previews have been on, and apparently it's absolutely incredible. George Murphy is in it, Damien Dempsey has written some of the songs, so that's another Cabra man remembered beginning tomorrow night in the Ambassador. Brendan Menton Jr., just as your father, Brendan, was well-known, same name, and he was the founder of Home Farm.
Yeah, Joe, we're 3 years' time, we'll be celebrating our centenary in 2028. He was one of the founders along with his great friend Don Seary. And I've been involved from playing and administration of the club in different capacities since 1961. So
wow,
and now I'm actually
well done. And how's the club doing?
We're on the way back.
Okay,
we have two of our younger teams that are in semi final of the All Ireland Cups, the under 13s and the under 14s.
Brilliant.
Our section is going great. Our under 14s won the Dublin District Schoolboy League at the weekend. It's going great. We've had, you know, we've ambitions in terms of improving our standards. We've re-equipped our gym. Studying plans for the future. Football has changed fundamentally over the last 10 years in Ireland, particularly at the schoolboy level. But we've ambitions to get the club back to the top level. And Joe, while I'm talking about it, it's actually 50 years since Ireland won the FAI Senior Cup with our amateur team in 1975.
Colin Farrell won it, yeah.
And
Brendan, and of course, League of Ireland has gone through a magnificent resurgence, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Well, actually, it's a surge, and hopefully, it'll be more than a resurgence because it's 33,000 at the Aviva for Rovers and Bows, yeah. Which must be a record, which is absolutely, and the atmosphere around the League of Ireland at the minute is absolutely fantastic.
Part of that is that the clubs have outreached into the communities.
Yeah.
You know, particularly in Dublin, and I think in other towns where football is strong, this has happened as well. But you know, Bohemian, St. Pat's, Rovers, they've really developed their connections with the community, and I think that's a significant element of why the League of Ireland is going so strong.
And did your father talk about Liam? Well, your father was a well-known public figure as well. He was in the Department of Finance. He was an economist.
Yeah.
T.K. Whitaker. Yes, he was very well, very well known. I met him on a number of occasions.
I would have been too young, but I remember when the news came through on that February day, there was shock in the house. And I know my dad was part of the cortege that walked the coffin through the streets of Dublin, and he would have been involved in terms with Billy Beane. I think I vaguely remember Billy Beane. I would have met him a couple of times, but yeah. I think I remember visiting the house, our house, and when he was, you know, negotiating. Well, there was no transfer fees in from those days, but
the money was small, even in the UK team, the English teams.
Yeah, I think
the money was small. Money. Yeah.
It was maximum wage. I think even in the early 60s, it was as low as £20 a week.
Yeah.
You know?
Living in digs. But Dave, there was a great atmosphere. And you mentioned the funeral and your father being one of the in the cortege. Over 20,000 people turned out for that funeral.
I know.
Which is incredible in 1958.
Stay
there if you would, sec, Brandon. It's great to hear. It's great to hear that the family name is still so heavily involved in Home Farm. James Nicholson, James.
Hi, Joe.
You want to remember the three Irish players you want to mention?
Yeah, a quarter of the team was Irish. That's one were with the first European Cup final win. Shea Brennan, Tony Dunn, and George Best.
Yeah,
a quarter of the team.
So
it's over a quarter of the team, actually.
Well, there's a connection, isn't it? Wow.
Well, like, it's amazing, but they played for football. They didn't play for money.
I know that.
Supporting Man United now, it seems like a good day in the souvenir shop is more important than 3 points.
Okay.
It's unfortunate. Just one fact. Young players now on wages to get their first contract. They buy a Jeep for $200,000 and it costs $200,000 to insure it. That's what you're dealing with.
Yeah.
And our lads used to roll out their socks down and get stuck in. Even Roy.
With their boots and their stockings up to their knees and whatever, yeah.
And muck.
Yeah.
Played in mud.
Who wanted
and
to come in there? Was it Brandon wanted to come in?
One of the other things is the connection between Cabra and Home Farm back in the 50s and 60s was major. It wasn't only Liam Whelan, but the Dixon brothers, the three Dixon brothers, Brendan, Billy and Ken, all came through Home Farm. Billy Newman, who gave up an international cap, was also a Home Farm schoolboy. And Ronnie Whelan Sr. was also from Cabra. So back at that time, the connection between Home Farm and Cabra was...
Joe, am I still there?
You are, John. Yeah, loud and clear.
Yeah, no, well, he's actually forgetting now. He's forgetting about the Conroy's.
Oh, yeah.
The Conroy's. The Conroy's. I was only actually with them the other day, the Conroy's, Terry and Michael. Because
John, I was with them as well because Michael Conroy and Terry, who I met, but Michael was a very, very close friend of mine. Anne is wonderful woman.
Lovely lady.
She died last week, and that's where we met. The Conroy's.
It was actually through Liam and Ronnie Whelan Senior. He lived on the Traxler Road. Ronnie Whelan Senior lived on the Traxler Road.
Great history.
Yeah.
Peter, Mark, sorry for holding you there. Peter, come in. You're in Balbriggan.
Joe, how are you doing?
Your father palled around with who?
My father.
Oh, your father palled around with Liam. So brilliant,
Yeah. I don't know if John remembers him. Tommy Morta is his name.
Oh.
Over to England.
Tommy Morta actually worked with Liam in Cassidy's.
When Liam
went over, they actually had up at the John's Lane Church. What's it called? The hall there. But in any case, Cassidy's had a warehouse there, and when Liam went to England, Tommy Morta went with him.
Okay.
And great pals. I were great friends with the Mortas.
And Peter was your dad a ball player?
No, he wasn't.
When it suited him.
He used to tell me the stories, Joe, of he'd be out with Liam maybe on a Saturday night over in Manchester, and they'd be going into some club, and women would be coming up looking for autographs and the whole lot. And sure, my father started signing autographs.
No, good lad.
Say, just go ahead, go with it.
Good
lad. It'd be free everywhere, and he said, he'd go up to Old Trafford, and next while Liam would be up in the top window, and he dropped the complimentary tickets down to him. And
Tommy, very good golfer, Ronaldo. Very good golfer.
Yeah, superstardom. Okay, John, you're up in St. Paul's now in Glasnevin.
They're starving. They're ready. They're looking.
Yeah, where are they going? Go around and get a coddle in the grave diggers there. Kieran will put it on for you.
Probably Talca House. You probably go to.
Okay, down the road there. It's a very big venue. Okay, well, John, it's great to talk to you. You're a wonderful, wonderful family yourself and Rita, and I know your older brother Christy as well, and who's passed. So I suspect there's going to be more events. You say you keep being surprised, John.
Rita said this morning to the supporters there, it could be the last year, and they said no.
The legend lives on.
They'll keep it going.
Like yourselves and your wonderful group of supporters and the Man United supporter clubs are always good humoured and good natured and very friendly and helpful. Thanks indeed. You've got to meet Mahaga,
thanks,
John.
God rest
young Liam. And thank you, Peter, Brendan, and Eamon, and James, various other calls. Really appreciate Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Val Roach is in Cardo. Val, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. But you were surprised. I think a lot of people were with this figure that even though it's free, it's very well advertised, it goes for a specific age group, only 41% of the relevant age group, 59 to 69, took up the free bowel screening option. You're surprised?
Very surprised indeed. And, it's a very prevalent type of cancer. And I think there should be it should be better advertised. And I mean, why in the world is it, age restricted? I mean, cancer doesn't look for any particular age of person, but 59 to 69. And I believe now they're extending the cohort by another year or something like that. But there's confusion caused for elderly people by asking them to, you know, use the digital methods or using email, bowlscreen.ie and all this sort of stuff. I mean, you know, I can't see why, for example, that your GP wouldn't have those test packs, which all they are is a primary indicator of any possibility of problems in your bowel area. But they couldn't be handed out if you go to your doctor, and then you send them into the bowel screen lab, wherever that is.
Yeah,
you know?
Free post, and it's
it's
okay. You're saying the fact that you have to register and apply for the test instead of it being, as well as it's very well advertised, but as well as being available in other places. Val, did you avail of it yourself?
I did. I was between 60 and 65 there somewhere. It just arrived in the post one day, and instructions as to how to carry it out and all the rest of it. And it's simplicity in itself. Put it back into a jiffy pack that's addressed and everything else, and put it in the post box. And then somewhat later on, I got a letter saying that I was clear of any indicators, which was a great comfort and everything else, because actually my father had major problems in colorectal cancer.
And it's still quite rare, but it is treatable, especially the earlier the better. Stay there, Val. Emmett, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
You're a bowel cancer survivor.
I certainly am, Joe. And this way back in 2000, when I first fell a little bit ill and just went to my local GP, I wouldn't have been in the age group for the bowel screen program at the time. And even if I was, bowel screen wasn't available then. So I think it's an absolutely fantastic initiative.
Okay, and the figure, as I say, was released today is 41%, which is great. 41, but it still could be much, much better, especially given it's free and so important. Now, the HSE and the bowel screen program, which is, as I say, very well run, highly professional, both administratively and medically. The latest verified data shows that in the most recent year, 22-23, for which the uptake has gone up to 46.4%, which is great, which is an improvement. And also, from today, that's good news, from today, bowel screen is available to everyone free, obviously, aged from 59 to 70, so it's gone up, as you said. And over time, and I suspect reading the statement, it will be a relatively short time. Over time, we're expanding the age range for bowel screen from 55 to 74.
So, from my experience, you know, having found that the screen proved positive, unfortunately, in my case, but then I was able to have surgery and make a complete recovery in a very short time. So I would urge anybody at the earliest convenience to avail of the bowel screen. And a doctor I heard say something struck me this morning. The fact is you won't die from the bowel cancer, but you could die from the spread of it.
You can
prevent the spread. There's no two ways about it. The polyps can be taken off if there's any precancerous things, even during the colonoscopy. If it looks like you're a person who may be in danger. So the spread can be completely prevented and you can live a very happy, healthy life afterwards with no further effects.
And people are, thankfully, people are becoming much more cognizant and much more educated and informed about the early possible indications of cancer, be it under the armpit or for women in terms of breast cancer, though 99% is absolutely fine, but there's no harm getting everything checked, and that's a great education for everybody.
You can be perfectly hit and healthy and fit and not really see any dangerous signs at all, Joe. And we men, I think, seem to be the take up for us men is a little bit lower than for women. And it would be great if that could be rectified. And if all sectors would take up and get to a much higher level, it would be terrific.
Okay, so, and bowel screen again. It's well advertised. It's a very accessible website, and it's mentioned in your GP surgery. But again, there might be, as I think Val suggested, there might be more options available to people. And but Val, I wonder, can you, if you're worried, I presume you can, if you're worried about something you spot in your stool, you should go to your GP immediately. Should, yes, and they will have you screened. But as I say, the free bowel screening, where you don't have to go to your GP, is through the HSE, and they detect, apparently, early detection. 2,500 people every year in Ireland are diagnosed with bowel cancer, and it's the second most common cancers in men, and the third most common in women. And if it's found early, as in the case, I think, of most cancers, easier to treat and a better chance of recovery and our survival rates in terms of cancer. I know in childhood leukemia, it's gone up dramatically, which is brilliant. But our survival rates overall are going up, and it's through campaigns and, I hope, programmes like this to remind people about bowel screening. Val Roche, good to meet you, Margaret, and Emma. Thank you both. Joe at RT. Good morning. Joe at RT.ie, 51551 is the text number.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Eddie Cummins. Eddie, good afternoon. We mentioned this recently, and also in the context of high-vis jackets for cyclists, but one of the biggest pushbacks came from cyclists themselves, and it's still ongoing on Twitter, I see. Why should we be forced to wear high-vis jackets? What did you notice, and what has upset you, Eddie?
Yeah, how are you, Joe? Good. Well, as a lifelong cyclist, and I've seen the change in the use of bicycles and the amount of bicycles on the road and the behaviour of cyclists. I was out on Sunday. I went out to my mother's grave in Dean's Grange, cycled over, and I was on my way back. And I don't know whether you know these bikes. I refer to them as bikes with buckets in the front.
Yeah, the cargo, you know, the cargo carry, bikes, they call them.
Well,
yeah.
They can carry, but they can carry two or three children. And They're expensive, like range from about 3,000 to 7,000 euro.
Wow.
And a big investment, and they look fantastic. But I was coming home past the RDS yesterday.
Okay.
And I have a speedometer on my bike. I always like to know how far I'm cycling. Okay. I add up each week how much I've done. So I was doing about 25k an hour.
Right.
And this bicycle passed me going a good bit faster. And it was one of these bikes with the buckets in the front of them with children, with a mother on it, I presume. No helmet, Joe. No helmet. And that's the second one I saw that day. 20 minutes later, another lady crossed in front of me with the same bike. No helmet. And I always refer to, like, cycling without a helmet is like getting into a car and not putting on your seatbelt. You know,
the only difference is a helmet. A car is seatbelt is compulsory and enforced.
Yeah, they should be compulsory, Joe. Helmet should be compulsory. I've seen too many accidents. I've seen so many documentaries on the benefit of wearing a helmet. Now, if you're doing 100 miles an hour, you know, and you get hit by a car, helmet will take a serious protection, but even people with helmets have died, you know, because of the speed at which they're travelling or the speed at which they hit. But if you fall off a bike, I've saw so many situations where people from a standing position falling and hitting their heads and having life-changing injuries. Now, if you're going along on a bike at 30 or 40 kilometres an hour and you come off that bike, your head is going to hit the ground. You know, it's the statistics are there. And I'm just exasperated by it, that a person who can invest, you know, thousands of pounds to transport their children, and yet they can't buy a helmet. You know, a helmet would be 1% of what they paid for the bike. And it's, and I know, I don't want to be disrespectful to motorists, you know, but I think all the mad motorists or cyclists have got taken up in cars, because even cars now, I've seen more and more cars going through red lights in the last year than I've ever seen in the previous 40. You know, it seems to be a total disregard for any sort of
Well, Prime Time did a report there a few weeks ago.
Shocking, Joe. Like I've witnessed two incidents in the last year where, only put of the grace of God, I don't know how, but cars went through red lights at speed and just missed people by inches. And it's just a lack. I mean, I always say to people jokingly, what's the difference between a house and a car?
Mm-hmm.
Well, a house can't travel at 60 miles an hour, because I've witnessed people doing everything in a car, having their breakfast, on the phone, you know, shaving, doing their makeup, combing their hair. This is when they're travelling at speed in their car, because they see their car as just an extension of their home. Yeah. And bicycle and cyclists are just starting to get.
Just to go back to the helmet again, when we did it a few weeks ago, Eddie Keane, who's Ellen, you know Ellen Keane, our wonderful gold Paralympic Olympian gold medalist. Eddie called us in, and Eddie had been out cycling, I think out in Howth, that direction, and he had come off his bike, and he was wearing a helmet, and he said it saved his life.
Yeah, well, Joe, in the last 50 years, my helmet has certainly saved me from serious injury on three occasions I can vividly remember.
I remember one of the arguments put up against helmets by some cyclists is they make you too complacent.
Do you think so, Joe?
No, I'm asking you, do they?
That's like saying getting into a car and not putting your belt on makes you complacent. You know, it's important. Even the pros now, all the pros, in all the events, they all wear cycling helmets. And I wear a cycling helmet no matter what the weather is, no matter how hot it is or how cold it is. I always wear my helmet. And on the rare occasion when I leave the house, sometimes I'm so used to it, I forget to put on my helmet. The minute I realise I don't have it on me, I go into a panic. If this will be the day, I'll probably get hit by a car when I'm not wearing my helmet. You know, I religiously, I do not leave the house without putting on my helmet if I'm cycling. And more, Joe, it is not an age thing. I'm cycling. I've seen it up. I was cycling up Capure there a number of months ago. I came across a group of fairly, same age as yourself, in their 60s cyclists. And two of them had their helmets on their handlebars, cycling along.
Yeah.
And it just boggles the mind. What are they thinking of? You know. So for me, Joe.
They're also saying, and this was the message. They're also saying motorists need to be more cautious and more aware of cyclists as well. But because when it comes to a tussle, God forbid, the poor cyclist is going to come
off. But the problem with motorists is, Joe, is that they see the car as an extension of their home. Because you go into a car, you have central heating, you have air conditioning, you have the radio. Some even have things onto the back seat for the kids to watch videos. So it's like an extension of your home, and they don't realise that they're lethal. I mean, even the advertising of cars is like, it's beautiful, it's exotic, it's you must have this.
Well, one of the big things they now in advertising cars is how safe you are inside the car.
If you're travelling at the permitted speed, Joe.
Okay.
There was a young lad there killed tragically up on the Red Cow there. Couple of years ago. It was just in the papers there recently. And I've been up in the Red Cow, and that is a year ago I was up there, and I rang the guards up and I complained about the parking of cars and the use of the footpath and the bicycle lane for cars parking up there.
Okay.
And I said that there's an accident waiting to happen. Someone's going to lose their life. Okay. And there's a company up there, I won't mention the company's name, Joe, but they use the footpath as a car park. And when I'm saying car park, there are 20, 25 cars parked up continuously up on the footpath, up in the Red Cow. So thanks. Besides helmet, that's okay. Another paid mine.
Okay, well said. Well said.
Lanes.
That's Eddie Cummins. And regards to Brian Smith. Unfortunately, didn't get you, Brian, but your father taught the late great Liam Whelan in the school in Cabra. Kieran Cullen on sound, broadcast coordinator Shane Galvin, Annette Egan producing. Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Refresh your home this spring with new curtains. Explore our stylish collection now at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.